Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Veterans Radio Podcast. Cyrus Raymond here from the Legal Help for Veterans Studio in Northville, Michigan. Just want to thank you for clicking on the download button on today's show. And also would like to thank podbros.com for having this podcast on their website. Head to their page and check out many other great podcasts. Until then, let's take it back to Jim Fossone right here on the Veterans Radio Podcast.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
And good afternoon, Veterans Radio listeners. We've got a great program for you today. We're going to talk to three incredible women pilots. Two that are currently active in their service and another who's been out for quite a while but is moved on to be a leadership and management consultant. Sitting in the co-pilot chair with me is Dale Thronberry. Dale, how are you this afternoon?
I am terrific and wonderful, and it's great to be here, Jim, and to talk to these pilots. I love talking to pilots as a pilot myself.
I know you do.
And it's going to be exciting to talk with them. I'm interested in hearing their tales of excitement.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio. We want to introduce to our listeners Major Michelle Rule and Captain Christian Mastracchio. Michelle, are you there?
I'm here, Jim. Hello.
Excellent. And Christian, are you there?
Yes, thanks for having me.
We're great to have both of you. Now, I know putting the logistics of this together was a little challenging. Major, where are you? Where is there?
I just landed in California, but yes, I did start in Bali, Indonesia, Hong Kong, L.A. last night, and now I'm in Sacramento.
You may win the long distance award. Captain, where are you?
Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota. I've been chosen to be frozen up here.
And the whole Bali thing at the moment seems just not fair, doesn't it? Well, let me set this up, and we have want to get across to our listeners a little bit about your careers. Major Rule has a BS in English from the United States Air Force Academy, and she has two master's degrees, one in psychology and one in English teaching and writing. Kristen Mastracchio is also a United States Air Force Academy grad and went on and did master's work at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, picking up a master's in science and engineering systems. Kristen, I believe your undergraduate is in, some rocket science thing. These are two pretty smart cookies, is what I've concluded, Dale. I know you're right up there with them, Dale.
Oh, obviously I am.
Yes.
I understand that. All the things that they're going to talk about, I know pretty much verbatim.
Yeah, this is why you flew helicopters.
That's very true. That we only had, we had a compass in it, and that was it. As long as it was running, we felt it was okay.
So what I'm interested in hearing about, and let's start with this. Michelle, how did you decide to go to the academy, and what flamed the desire to fly?
Well, I'd have to give the credit back to my grandfather. He flew B-24s back in World War II. And when I was really little, he lived in Allen Park, Michigan. And he'd sit me on his lap, and he'd open up airplane books, and we'd go page by page, and he'd quiz me on what things were, and I just kind of grew up with it and the desire to fly. And then I found out how much money it cost. So turns out the Air Force Academy will fund your education, and it gives you a pretty good chance of getting a pilot slot.
Excellent. Kristen, how did you develop the desire to fly and go to the academy?
My inspiration came from just growing up in Houston, Texas, right by NASA, going to air shows with my family. And my dad encouraged me to do what I'm passionate about, something I would pay to do instead of getting paid to do it. I said, the only thing I would pay to do is fly in space. Right then I knew I needed to pursue a career in space and aviation. And many parents in our community were astronauts and pilots, so it seemed like an attainable occupation. And my brother was in Air Force ROTC at Texas A&M University. We had cadets from the Drum and Bugle Corps come stay with our family one time. So I had a lot of just ways to know. And then my advisor at MIT, Dr. Misty Cummings, was one of our nation's first female F-18 pilots. So I just decided, yeah, I want to go to pilot training. But it really was that I wanted to do something big after high school. I hadn't even decided to become a pilot. I just wanted to have a grand adventure, and I knew I wanted to be an astro engineer and a collegiate cheerleader, and I always had a heart to serve. The Air Force Academy was the only place that had all those things.
Just so that the two of you can figure out when you passed through the Air Force Academy, when did you graduate, Michelle?
I was class of 2003.
And Kristen, when did you graduate?
2008.
Okay. So one of the things I think I hear in both of your stories, and maybe you'd each comment on, is while you had these big dreams, people actually encouraged you to reach those goals. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. I think we both give credit for our dads. Again, this is a major role, but my father personally never, ever flinched when I said I wanted to be a circus performer, and he said, okay. When I said I wanted to be an actor on Broadway, he said, okay. And then finally when I said, oh, no, I think I actually want to fly planes for the Air Force, he said, absolutely, what can I do to support you? And he helped me fill out the applications and put me out there and stood behind me even in those days during basic training when it really, really is not fun.
Yeah, my dad said he wanted to be the shoulders that I stood on to do something great, have a grand adventure.
So, Dale, I think one of the reasons we tell these stories is we want veterans and their friends who are out there to hear what it takes to inspire the next round of leaders in our military. And I think we've just heard a little bit about that. And hopefully the dads and granddads who are listening take this to heart.
Well, I think that's probably changed now. It's the mothers and the grandmothers who can tell their stories and say, sure, follow in my own footsteps. And
absolutely.
Be whatever you want to be. It's always great to hear the dads encouraging their sons and daughters to be what they want to be, especially a circus performer.
So let me ask each of you to talk a little bit. Major, I'll start with you. Would you talk a little bit about the airframes that you currently fly and are rated to fly?
Absolutely. I started off flying the C-130, an old E model. So it was one of the earlier models. So it was what we call steam gauges. It didn't have the glass cockpit. So I flew out of Dyess Air Force Base in Texas. And then I had the chance to go to AFIT, which is a training program to get your master's degree and go teach at the Air Force Academy. So while I was teaching English at the Academy, I realized I missed flying, and I volunteered for a new program. It's called the MC-12, and the Air Force bought a bunch of King Airs off of the private line from doctors and lawyers, and they tore out the insides, all the nice cushy seats. They put in high-tech cameras. And we are supplied to work with the Army for several different missions where we give reconnaissance and intelligence. So I switched over to the MC-12 and just got done with a second deployment in Afghanistan. So that's why I was taking some time off in Bali.
And what's the purpose of the MC-12?
Well, let's see. What can I actually tell you? It's a top-secret reconnaissance and intelligence aircraft.
That's it.
So we help the guys on the ground accomplish their mission.
And you were at Bagram Air Force Base?
I was. I was at Bagram. Our squadron is shutting down now and passing things back over to the Army, but we still work closely with them. It's a pretty integrated program.
And, Kristen, I believe you are flying the B-52?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, it is just awesome. I just got back from a 6-month deployment to Guam, and we were doing Pacific power projection missions. So we were just preserving the peace out there and deterring aggression by doing what we do every day, just going out there and flying and just remaining ever vigilant through our training of releasing full loads of live munitions on target is more fun than I thought it could be. We've been practicing bombing this little island, Farallon de Mendanilla, that's uninhabited, and my mom's like, that little island never did anything to anybody, but we're decimating it every day.
And the B-52 is huge. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about how huge it is?
It is just a monstrosity to fly. It
is 185 feet long, and the wings are back at a 45-degree angle. It's about 450,000 pounds when we take off, and you can just feel the weight of the aircraft. It's really just like controlling a monstrosity of fuel, metal, and bombs. It doesn't even feel like an aircraft sometimes.
This is an aircraft that's been in our arsenal for, what, 60 years almost now?
That's right. More than that.
We had I had the privilege, I guess, or the fear of flying in to landing zones that B-52s made out of the jungle, and sometimes our timing was a little bit off, and it got a little bit scary because we could see the bombs still coming down as we're getting too close. So
timing is everything.
Thank you for all the helicopter pilots, for all the B-52 pilots that were out there that made these instant landing zones. They were amazing.
And Kristen, the B-52 is now part of the Air Force Global Strike Command. Do I have that right?
That's right.
And how big is the crew that flies that huge plane?
A 5-person crew. Aircraft commander, that's me, the co-pilot, a radar navigator, and a navigator, which are really weapons specialists. And then we have an electronic warfare officer to help us defend the jet. And working together with the crew to solve emerging problems is the ultimate way to meet commander's intent. I love working with a crew.
That's excellent. Major, when you flew the C-130, where did that take you?
Oh, most of our missions then were going through IUD over in Qatar. A lot of that C-130 unit has now moved over to Bagr, and so it was really nice when I switched aircraft to see the old crew guys from the C-130. And like she was saying, working with crew aircraft, I know you'll probably talk to the fighter pilot after this, and she'll say how great it was to fly solo. But having a crew of guys to lean on and get the mission accomplished, it's pretty much indescribable. You've got some of these 18, 19-year-old guys in the back of the aircraft that I fly now, the MC-12, and they're running things way more complicated than I had. You know, 18, 19, I'm just trying to get through the academy and finish my classes. And these guys are identifying things through high-tech equipment and calling in the big guns and taking care of business on the ground. So I'm impressed by my crew every day.
And, Michelle, you flew a number of combat missions, I believe.
I did. I can't even keep it all straight. I knew you might ask, so I was trying to remember. I think it's about 168, maybe 170 over Afghanistan.
And this is a question for both of you. I'll start with the captain, though. Maybe you want to can tell us what you think your most interesting mission is, however you might describe that.
Flying such a historic and enduring aircraft makes me proud to bring peace through nuclear deterrent. We just had a big nuclear generation, and I really appreciate being able to preserve peace just through deterrent.
And Michelle, what would you describe as your most interesting mission?
Well, I have to say one of the ones that stays in my heart, there's probably two, but one of them was, like I said, we work closely with the ground troops, and we do a pre-briefing with them, and we can communicate on the radios, and then they go out and do their mission, we support them, and then we finish. And during one particular hairy night, it was pretty dark, we fly over the mountains, and sometimes they have to stay out all night. And they'll take, I don't even know how they power it, I think it's somehow solar powered, but they'll take an iPad out there with some music. And just as we were about to start a mission, one of them plays Toby Keith over the radio so that all the air crews above them could hear. And it was pretty touching to hear the strength of the ground crews and how they were trying to encourage us as we're supporting them. And it was a pretty patriotic moment. And then I'd probably say a second one is we lost an air crew, unfortunately, about a year and a half ago now. And as we were shutting down our squadron, at Bagram Air Base recently, we did one last roll call to the 4 members that were lost, and to be up there in the air and to hear their names, and one last time before the squadron shut down was very touching.
Well, we know this is this career both of you have chosen to serve your country in this way has taken you all over the world. You've touched on some of the places, but it's not an easy career either. Would either of you wish to talk about some of the challenges that you've faced?
Well, sure. I can start with that, Major, again. I face a lot of challenges that are aviation-related and some that aren't. The Air Force has been such a blessing. They've sent us all over, you know, the Southeast Asia, to work in Afghanistan, but I've also had the opportunity during graduate school to do some research and work with children in Africa. So I went to Ghana and Tanzania and also Nepal, and it was to study how they were learning English and then be able to take that research back to the Air Force. And some of the conditions that I saw in Africa were heartbreaking, but to be able to sit with the children and teach them just a little bit of English and about healthcare and clean water and dig some wells, all because I've been blessed by the Air Force and was able to give that back. So it's challenging, but we're doing the right thing. The Air Force is trying to reach out in every way that it can. So that's all I got.
It's a lot. Kristen, do you want to take a stab at it?
Yeah, I would just say it takes a really strong work ethic and then just maybe the peer competition that you're going to go against in pilot training. You just have to keep going and then keep working together. And you got to trust but verify each other.
Well, I think one of the opportunities we have on Veterans Radio is to reach out and let folks like you who are doing great work pass it on to the next generation as to if there are kids out there, whether they be boys or girls, who are interested in some aspect of the career you've chosen. What words of advice would you pass along, Kristen?
I would say be confident and work hard. Just go for it, no matter what your background has been. I really think that cheerleading and gymnastics and excelling in school prepared me to be a pilot. So whatever your passion is can provide the skill set to succeed in flying. And I would say the Air Force Academy provides the highest likelihood of earning an Air Force pilot slot. So to get an appointment to the Air Force Academy, you must be well-rounded with high grades and high SAT scores, leadership activities, and play a varsity sport.
Michelle, you want to take a swing at that one?
Sure. I'd also say if the Air Force Academy isn't quite your thing, my younger brother is actually applying to ROTC at the University of Michigan right now. So we're helping him with some of those same things, being well-rounded. So community service work with the Fallen Wounded Soldiers Fund and singing in the choir and running track. But I would also say, just from my experience, is find a mentor. You find someone that has been doing what you are passionate about, and you ask questions. And if you can find one mentor, great. If you can find two, if you can find three, ask them, how did you get to where you are? For instance, your wife is one of my mentors, but General Fossone taught me what it's like to be a strong servant leader. I remember when I was graduating from the Air Force Academy, she carried my suitcases as a general, and I was a cadet. And I will never forget watching a general carry my things and thinking to myself, I want her to be my mentor, and I want to do that. I want to be a servant leader. So if you're listening and you have dreams, find someone who's gone before you and ask questions.
That's very nice of you, Michelle. We're very appreciative of having both of you on the show. We've come to the end of the first half hour amazingly. I suspect that we need both of these women back, Dale, don't you?
I think so.
And, but we're glad to have you, and we know it wasn't easy to get lined up in your schedules. Thank you for all the wisdom that you've passed along, and also thank you for the service that you're doing to our country.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.